Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Freedom Blog Talk Radio, free, live, and mad here from Eugene, Oregon. People are already lining up to get on the call. Mind Freedom International is a 100% independent nonprofit united to win human rights and alternatives. I see my friends trying to wave at me, but he should know that I have a fused spine, so he might want to actually come in here and let me know with a, because I can't, yeah, thanks a lot, John. So anyway, everybody, we have somebody actually helping here, my buddy John McCarthy. He died. Okay, this is definitely a mad radio here. John Jordan Cascade is helping us out today in the studio, and he's supporting us in broadcasting live. Mind Freedom International is a 100% independent nonprofit united to win human rights and alternatives in mental health. We're for voice and choice, and we have people all over the world united to, for a nonviolent revolution in the mental health system. Today we have a really special show with Jim Gottstein, attorney, psychiatric survivor, activist, founder of Psych Rights. He's an amazing friend, a leader of quite a few different groups. For instance, he's on the board of the National Association for Rights Protection and Advocacy, which is an absolutely key advocacy organization. He's also with the International Society for Ethical Psychiatry and Psychology, which has been really pulling together a lot of dissident mental health professionals. So we'll have him on in just a moment. I wanted to give a little bit of news out first, and that's that we have a news release on our website, mindfreedom.org, mindfreedom.org, and you can go there and find the news release for our Occupy American Psychiatric Association, Occupy the American Psychiatric Association. And I guess my buddy who died a few weeks ago, John McCarthy, will be there in spirit since I've announced that he's here. But we'll be going into Philadelphia, a whole lot of us. There's about 18 speakers already confirmed. And on Saturday, May 5th, 2012, as thousands of psychiatrists are gathering in Philadelphia, we'll be there too. And we're folks with psychiatric labels and supporters. We'll be challenging the APA's new label Bible. They're coming up with the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the DSM-5, scheduled for publication in 2013. So we're calling this Occupy the APA, though as a tag for, we'll be using for hashtag, well, it'll be Occupy APA for Twitter and so forth. We're going to have, we're going to be gathering that morning, and then we're going to be having a number of speakers at a big hall, plenty of room, just a few blocks from the APA, gathering in a Quaker hall that we've rented. We'll have speakers like Brent Robbins, who we've had on the show. He's from the Society for Humanistic Psychology. Jim Gottstein is flying in all the way from Alaska. Paula Kaplan, who's been on the show, a key psychologist challenging the label Bible, the DSM. So we have all these and more coming in to be part of our event. And you can participate wherever you are. There are ways to participate from wherever you are. If you go onto our website, if you can't get to Philadelphia, there are ways to, for instance, rip up your label on YouTube and load it up, tag it with Occupy APA, or hold an event where you are. So why are we psychiatric survivors and allies, why are we headed to Philadelphia? Why are we going to be directly in front of these thousands of American psychiatrists? Why are we saying no to their label Bible? I want to say everybody's views are respected. If you're helped by your diagnosis and that's part of your recovery, you're respected here. But what we object to is the pushing, the bullying, the labeling. of us. For instance, apparently my so-called delusion that I thought my friend John McCarthy was here in the recording studio definitely would be seen as a psychotic experience. I better bring Jim Gottstein on, though, because I know peer support is helpful when one has entered those altered states here. Jim, can you hear me okay?
You bet.
So welcome, Jim Gottstein, all the way from Alaska. You're so much. I mean, you went through Harvard, became an attorney. You founded Psych Rights, the public interest group that's really understands the role of activism. You've been forcibly drugged like me. So tell us, you know, why should we all go to Philadelphia or protest wherever we are? What's wrong with the DSM? What's wrong with the APA?
Well, I think the overarching thing is how much damage, how much harm psychiatric practice is causing. And I think as a moral matter, everybody that can needs to do what they can to try and stop the carnage. What we're seeing is a doctor-caused epidemic, as documented by Robert Whitaker, that is of such massive proportions, with you know, literally killing people and ruining people's lives in the millions, and the country doesn't realize what's going on. And I think it's very important for us to take a stand as a moral matter, and that's why I'm crossing the country to go to Philadelphia and be a part of it.
So, you know, we're calling this Occupy APA. We're intending this to be a peaceful activity. What is it about, especially the DSM, that we should be focusing on? Obviously, we've been forcibly drugged. We know about forced electroshock, solitary confinement, all these horrendous human rights violations. What especially about the DSM should really bring people out at this time?
Well, there's a couple things. One is the DSM is the basis for all of the profits that are made through psychiatry, and especially drugs, but in other parts of psychiatry, and in fact the whole mental health system. And so we've got huge profits being made on people, on people's suffering, by giving them labels and then submitting various services to the government, medical payers, and which is a lot for our people, and then private medical insurers for the less serious conditions generally. So that's the basis for this huge industry preying on people's emotional difficulties. And the thing right now is that the American Psychiatric Association is considering this new expansion of all these psychiatric labels, diagnoses, with a very dubious, at best, that's to be kind, scientific validity or any validity. Including a category for children called temper dysregulation disorder. And that's basically saying that a temper tantrum is something, is a mental illness, and rather than to be dealt with by parenting, is to be said, oh, there's something wrong with that child. It might be a 2-year-old or 3-year-old or, you know, 16-year-old, I suppose. I'm not sure what the age group is. And to be dealt with by saying there's something wrong with that child or youth's brain, and then drugging them. And then we've got this idea in the DSM that we should start prodromal. I forget the exact diagnosis that they're proposing, but it's under the category prodromal, which means basically predicting that someone is going to become, get a later diagnosis of schizophrenia, so we should start drugging them now. And there's a recent study that shows that they absolutely cannot predict that, you know, big surprise. But these are the sorts of things that go into the DSM, and this meeting, I understand the idea is that they're going to formally adopt it, although I don't know how they can do that when they're not even really finished with the trials.
So, Jim, we're already getting some callers who are wanting to chat, ask a question, make a comment. The call-in number is area code 646-595-2125, or people can Skype in. They can also email to radio@mindfreedom.org, radio@mindfreedom.org. That's our website, mindfreedom.org. You can see a photo of Jim, links to his organization, Psych Rights, background information. We also have a live chat going on here on the Blog Talk Radio site here for us if you want to participate in that chat. So if you want to call in live, though, it's 646-595-2125. And let's bring on we have an email already here from somebody that's pretty interesting. I know this activist. We just did a event about this topic, the Mad Closet. He wants to know any thoughts about the sanism, which a lot of people haven't heard about. You know, there's racism, but there's also sanism, that he may encounter when he comes out about being a survivor of the mental health system. He's wondering how to deal with the stereotyping and stigmas that often come with being labeled or perceived as having a mental health issue. This is particularly true because he is in a small town and he is employed in the school systems. So he's worried about future employment. So do you have a response to him about coming out of the closet? Are people are not required to come out of the closet to protest the APA, but suppose they did.
Well, first, sanism, I think, was a word coined by Professor Michael Perlin, who's been referred to as the icon of mental health disability law. And he talks about pretextuality and sanism. And sanism is the same as, like, racism. And it's this, it's basically prejudice against people who've had a psychiatric label attached to them. And so that's that pure and simple. And I never really try and talk people into coming out about their psychiatric histories necessarily. It's an intensely personal choice. And the reality is the consequences of that can be very severe. It can be you can lose your job, you can not be able to get a job. All kinds of serious consequences can attach to that. So I wouldn't minimize that. At the same time, it's very helpful, I think, to other people, for people who have had a brush with the mental health system or psychiatry and, you know, gotten through it and or maybe even a long period and gone on with their lives and been successful. It's helpful to have those kind of examples. So I think it depends where one is on that, and it's really a personal thing. And it's pretty much impossible to go back in the closet once you come out. So that's something to consider. Now, some people, of course, have, you know, kind of a reputation where everybody in the community already knows about it. And so I don't think, you know, it makes much difference in that kind of situation. And pretextuality is this legal thing where basically people's rights are taken away, being locked up and drugged against their will on pretext, on basically without actually satisfying the legal requirements for doing that. And anyway, that wasn't part of the question, but that's part of how Professor Perlin thinks of this issue.
Yeah, he is the one who helped make it famous. I note that Perlin has credited Morton Birnbaum, a physician and lawyer and advocate back in the 70s, for first using the word. But, yeah, he's the guy who's made it famous for sure. So let's have a caller here, and I see it's from area code 985. Caller, you're on the air. You want to give your name and where you're from?
Yeah, hi there.
Hi.
This is Walter in Louisiana.
All right, our number one fan there calls in every show.
Yeah.
Hey, Walter, how are you doing?
Number one fan.
How's Louisiana treating you?
I've got a curiosity question about people who live in their homes, and periodically people come to their homes and want to force drugs on them that we know cause brain damage and shorten their lives by 25 years. You know, we do have in every state justifiable homicide laws, and which basically state that if you feel that someone is going to cause you serious bodily injury, you have the right to defend yourself, including the use of lethal force. What do you think about that?
Wow, Walter, that's a powerful question there. Of course, Mind Freedom, we're following a nonviolence guideline. We're not pacifists, but our action in Philadelphia is peaceful. We follow Gandhi and King, but you do bring up a good question. If somebody's being forcibly drugged at their own home, at what point is it justifiable force to defend themselves? Let's hear from Jim on that tough one there.
Well, I think that's a very interesting question and a very good point. And the reality is that at this stage of the public's perception, or the, you know, kind of the common wisdom, is that kind of an assertion would be regarded as crazy. Oh, this person is crazy. And that's one of the reasons why this protest is so important, is to bring out this information. To me, it speaks volumes that people in the public mental health system are dying 25 years earlier than the general population. And basically, not only is there not an uproar, virtually no one cares. And so from society's point of view, I think people in the mental health system are valued so little that having them die 25 years early is a perfectly acceptable outcome. And so while I think legally that's actually a very strong argument, in practice, it would just get laughed out of court.
Thank you, Walter. I think it is interesting that, you know, Mind Freedom has always had a nonviolence guideline where we try to treat even our opponents in a civil way. I hear once in a while someone will say, who's an electroshock survivor, oh, I'd like the shock doctor. And I'll hear them say that, and I know they're just venting. But I think it's important that we have the discipline of a nonviolent army. Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement was about a nonviolent army. And when you do that, you've got to have that discipline of holding the message that we are actually the peaceful ones. We're out in front. So, but thank you, Walter. That's a provocative question.
Yeah, and I'd like to just add another thing. I said it's a good argument, but there's also this principle that you have to do everything that you can to avoid lethal force. And so, although in some ways protecting the home, you have special rights. But basically, I certainly agree with you, David. It's not a good idea. And what we really need to do is get the people, the public, to understand and the courts to understand that these drugs and electroshock that are being forced on people are not in people's best interest, and get the court system to respect people's legal rights in this regard.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you again, Walter. We have a caller in area code 559 that I'm going to bring up here, and so let me bring that caller on here. Caller, I hit the button. It's not responding. There we go. Caller, you're calling from area code 559. Where are you calling from, and your name?
Yes, hi. My name is Donna, and I'm from Fresno, California.
Donna from Fresno. Welcome. Donna,
thank you.
What's your comment or question for Jim?
Well, let's see. I kind of want to share my story briefly.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was in the mental health profession, and I graduated with a master's in social work, and I had worked my way through college as a licensed psychiatric technician. And right after I got my master's, I was diagnosed with rapid cycling bipolar, and that was from a psychiatrist I knew. And immediately I was put on bipolar medications, anti-anxiety, antidepressant, mood stabilizer. And then I got into therapy, and I was told, you know, I would have this label, this diagnosis for the rest of my life. And so I spent the next 16 years on the meds, and last year I came off of them. And I found out that I don't have bipolar. I don't have anything. So now I've been faced with my own self, and I've also been able to see the harm that I caused. And so I've been I'm re-looking at the whole situation, and what I see is that we are not honoring, we're not honoring adults with, say, depression, sadness. We're experiencing emotions, and we're basically saying to the person that that's not okay, that you're not okay, so take this medication. And then it places the person in a fog, so it virtually gives the person, you know, it minimizes the opportunity and the chances for that person to get something wonderful from their process, their journey. And with children, when we label them with ADHD and ADD and conduct disorder and what you're talking about, temper dysregulation disorder, you know, it's insanity.
Thanks, Donna. Let's hear from Jim about that. Jim and I are both survivors of forced psychiatric drugging. So, Jim, what's your response here to Donna?
Well, first, I just totally agree with everything that she said, and I guess if I had, I would speculate that originally, I don't know, Donna, were you on antidepressants when you first diagnosed with?
No, I wasn't.
Uh-huh. Because no. We're seeing this explosion in rapid cycling bipolar disorder, you know, diagnosing rapid cycling bipolar disorder, and we didn't really see that at all before the antidepressants were in use, and that's mm-hmm. one of the things that Robert Whitaker kind of suggested. The data shows is that the antidepressants are really causing a massive amount of rapid cycling.
Interesting. Interesting.
So I highly commend the book Anatomy of an Epidemic to anyone that wants to look, wants to understand what's going on at a society level with the psychiatric drugs.
Okay. Well, thank you. I will look at that book.
Oh, that's great, Don. I love it that you're also in the field of helping people. So you've been on both sides of the fence. There's a lot of sympathetic mental health workers, mental health professionals. I hope that you can protest wherever you are. We're actually experimenting with ways for people to protest using still photos or YouTube, where you rip up your label and then show your people's DSM. So watch for that. Get on our announcement list. At mindfreedom.org, in the right-hand corner there's an envelope, and you can click on that and get on our announcement list for updates so that you can find out about what we're doing. So thanks much, Donna.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you so much for your work.
Okay, and now from the Pennsylvania, where we'll be flying into for May 5th, from area code 610, your name and where you're calling from?
This is Mary Falla from Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Mary Falla. Mary Falla is a mental health consumer, psychiatric survivor leader there in Pennsylvania, working with a lot of people who are changing the mental health system. So welcome, Mary. You got a comment or question for Jim?
Yes. I just wanted to comment about, you know, Jim, was talking about, you know, how people are dying 25 years younger in the public mental health system, and there's not an outcry. And what I see that is happening is, you know, it's noticed, and then it's attributed to things like poor lifestyle habits, diabetes, and it's not attributed to the iatrogenic effects of the medications. That's just like sidestepped. It's you know, evaded. And in where we live, there's something called a peer support whole health. And I mean, it's good, but again, you can get drawn into it, and still nothing. There's nothing said about the iatrogenic effects of the medication. They'll work on healthy eating, physical activity, sleep, and all these things. And you could still end up with a nurse and a doctor who's insisting that you need these medications because you have a brain disorder, and not questioning that. So I just wanted to comment on that.
Thanks, Mary. It's a great question. So what about the deaths in the mental health system? Mary's referring to a major study by the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors that found that people in the public mental health system in the USA die 25 years earlier than the general public. Even the researchers mentioned that over-drugging is a factor. But, yeah, you don't hear about that very much in the mental health system. Jim, you want to respond?
Yes, there was a seminal study conducted by Dr. David Healy, who literally wrote the book, The History of Psychopharmacology, and a well-respected clinician and researcher, and he's been an expert in many cases and kind of got turned. He started out basically believing in the drugs and now is very, very much against them, for the amount of use that they're being used now. He did a study of the patients in Wales in around 1900 in the hospitals, and he found that the lifespans of people in the hospitals then, the psychiatric hospitals, were normal. And then if you look at, what is it, the suitcases? Remember the Darby Penny and Peter Stastny's study of that hospital that got closed in New York? I always forget the name. Anyway, they had people that were living to old age at this psychiatric institution. And then what you saw is with the introduction of the first generation of neuroleptics such as Thorazine and Stelazine, Haldol, Melaril, etc., the lifespans were now reduced to by 10 to 15 years. That's what the study showed. And then with the introduction of the newer neuroleptics about, 15 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, that's when the lifespans plummeted by another 10 years to the what we have now, the 25-year shorter lifespans. And I think it's not just the newer neuroleptics, which are very, very physically harmful. I mean, people get diabetes from them, even if they don't have weight gain and other metabolic problems. But also the last 15, 20 years has seen this explosion in what's called polypharmacy, where people are given multiple drugs, multiple psychiatric drugs, and all of them have adverse physical effects. And so there's not really any doubt in my mind that this increased mortality is due to the psychiatric drugs. There's a black box warning on the neuroleptics, the second generation neuroleptics like Risperdal, Abilify, Zyprexa, Seroquel, that for the use in the elderly, that it doubles the mortality in people in the elderly. And of course, they're just being used ubiquitously, like candy in nursing homes because people are much easier to deal with if they can't get out of bed. So anyway, that's, I guess, a long-winded response to it's really denial on the part of the system to say that it's lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jim, the project you were wondering about is called the Willard Suitcase Project.
Oh, Willard,
people can find
right.
it just by Googling suitcases from a state hospital. Darby Penny and a photographer went in there and looked at our history inside of these institutions. And you're right. I mean, we're dying a lot earlier than before. Also, even when they blame lifestyle, they'll blame, for instance, smoking, tobacco. But it's well known that when you're on a neuroleptic, an antipsychotic neuroleptic, so-called, an antidote to the horrible feeling that you get is tobacco. It can help alleviate some of that feeling that you get from suppressing your neurotransmitters. So it's a holistic problem, and we need to remember T4 in Nazi Germany, we were one of the first groups actually killed. Now, I'm not suggesting that they have a conscious T4 program, but it does feel like our deaths in the mental health system are really being blown off, like you said. Also, I want to mention the brain damage, and that we're pro-choice. If you take prescribed psychiatric drug as part of your recovery with eyes wide open and a range of alternatives, you know, that's your choice. And a lot of our members do that, but they're not warning people and they're not providing alternatives. And the so-called antipsychotic neuroleptics can actually shrink your frontal lobes. That's no longer controversial in the medical system. You can Google antipsychotic brain damage and get our folder of information about that. And Jim, one other one is also nowadays on YouTube. You can go to YouTube and just put in tardive dyskinesia. You can also get that from our site by Googling antipsychotic brain damage. It's permanent twitching, and now you can see that on YouTube. When you and I started this work, it was hard to view tardive dyskinesia. The system tried to cover it up. So the newer drugs are causing more TD than they thought. So this permanent twitching problem from the antipsychotic neuroleptics is still here. They told us that these newer drugs would get rid of the TD problem, and it's still there. And people should go to YouTube and look up tardive dyskinesia, T-A-R-D-I-V-E, and then dyskinesia, D-Y-S-K-I-N-E-S-I-A. And I'm sure Google will help you with the spelling. But go onto YouTube and view this horror. You may not want to view it alone. So it's still being caused, and this is still forced on us. So go ahead, Mary. Did you have any other comments or question?
I guess not. I mean, I'm glad. Thank you, Jim, for bringing all that out. Because that's what I was saying, and I just didn't have the research to back it up. And what else I've heard people
it's
saying...
It's on our website, by the way. We have it, PsychRights. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, that's okay.
But on our website, PsychRights.org, there's a link on the left-hand side. There's kind of a table of contents, and one of them is scientific research by topic. And then one of them is neuroleptics. And we actually have posted that study by David Healy on that website. And there's massive numbers of studies. And one of the things that we do is we post the full article, not just the abstract or what someone says about it, the actual full published article so people can, you know, decide for themselves. But anyway, that article is there and all kinds of other articles as well.
Thank you so much, Mary. Very provocative question. I really
there's also what's his name, Waddington. There's some other studies too. Anyway, go ahead.
You know,
David.
People can reach Jim by just go to his website, PsychRights. But also, if you email radio@mindfreedom.org, you can continue to ask him questions later on. Mary, thanks so much. We have a whole bunch of callers coming in, and I'm so glad you're helping to be one of the organizers of the protest on May 5th. We'll see you if people just tuned in. May 5th, 2012. We'll be in front of the American Psychiatric Association, Occupy American Psychiatric Association, Say No to the New Label Bible, DSM-5, that's coming out, and all of this other horrendous violation that comes with their oppression. I think, you know, it's the size of the oppression that helps act as a mute button on people. It's the sheer enormity of the oppression here. And so people like Mary you've been doing peer support work, I know, in Pennsylvania, and that stuff is the engine. That unmutes us, Mary, so you keep that up, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you, Mary. And now we all the way from Ontario, Jim. Hey, Jim, by the way, you mentioned Healy. I think he's a good example. He's a dissident mental health professional. He spoke out against psych drugging. But unfortunately, Healy is horrible on the topic of electroshock. I think that what that shows is that this issue is not a civil war, pro or con drugs. I know some talk therapists want to make it a pro or con drug war. This is a nonviolent revolution. This is not a civil war. This is a nonviolent revolution of human rights and alternatives. Okay, all the way from Ontario, Canada, your name and where you're calling from? Comment or question for Jim?
Don White's in Toronto.
Hey, long time psych survivor activist.
Yeah,
Don
very,
White.
Very, very glad to be on your program,
Don, let me mention that you guys are, Don, hey, Don, let me mention that you guys are actually doing a protest, a simultaneous protest.
Yes,
that weekend in Toronto, and I've seen the poster, and it's a fantastic poster for that protest. What can people Google to find that? Is that Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault?
Well, actually, this is a joint protest with Occupy Toronto.
Excellent.
And it is not strictly a Kappa protest. We are doing this jointly for the first time in the history of Kappa with Occupy to Toronto, which is where we have reached out to them, and they seem to be quite supportive of our issues. And we are educating, and we will continue to educate those people in Occupy to Toronto want to know about electroshock, about the destructive effects of electroshock and psychiatric drugs. I just wanted to mention this, and Jim might be particularly interested in, there was a recent death of a 97-year-old woman who was prescribed Zyprexa, and they damn well knew that it was off-label and it should have been prescribed. She was suffering from dementia, and they gave Zyprexa to her, and she's dead. And that happened in a retirement or a nursing home, and some of us are damn mad about this, but the media is not, and the public apparently conspicuous by their silence, and I just thought I'd mention that, and I want to thank you, David, for mentioning the protest on May 6th. And we'll probably send out another poster. And we're very pleased about the graphic that was designed by one of our members, by a survivor. So I wonder, Jim, if you've heard of any deaths caused particularly in nursing homes and psychogeriatric wards. People prescribe the neuroleptics.
It's a huge problem. In fact, the Inspector General of the Department of Health and Human Services in the United States issued a report in May that they did a study, and about half of the neuroleptic prescriptions in nursing homes was basically Medicare fraud. In other words, it went against the it was off-label and or not otherwise allowed. Interestingly, they said, we can't really do anything about it, which is, I think, absurd. And the other thing I wanted to say is what's happening is that, you put someone's in a nursing home, and, if they're given these drugs, they can't complain. That shuts them up. And then they can't get out of bed. And so, you come and visit your mother, and they say, oh, well, your mother's old, And then, then your mother dies, and they say, oh, well, your mother was old. But you hear many stories of people who, can't get out of bed in these nursing homes, and they take them off the neuroleptics, and they come back to life. And so there's not really any question that these, I mean, it's has been proven statistically, as indicated by this black box warning, and also through many stories, that these, you know, they're basically, it's just cheaper to drug them and, you know, keep them in bed than have deal with people.
It's also a form of elder abuse, and I've been calling for a province-wide investigation into the psychiatric drugging of the elderly in particular. And by the way, you mentioned Healy about electroshock. Well, he is no friend of mine, and he's no friend or supporters of those of us who want to abolish shock, because David, as you know, with Edward Shorter, who's a poor excuse for an academic. He's a historian at the University of Toronto. It's very pro-shock, sloppy research in the book on electroshock that Healy and Shorter just published about a couple of years ago.
Thanks so much, Don.
Hey, Don, we've got
a whole lot of callers just coming.
I just want you to know that.
Okay, thank you so much, Don. Yeah, you bet. I already mentioned about Healy.
Right.
Yeah, he's a real problem.
Right,
Don White, yeah, you're an amazing activist and hero. So thank you so much, Don, for all that information. So we have a caller coming in. We have a bunch of callers in here. I noticed that, but you can still get in a call, 646-595-2125, 646-595-2125. So let's go to New Hampshire here with area code 603. Name and where you're calling from. Question or comment for Jim?
Hi, it's Wayne Ramsey. I'm in Salem, New Hampshire, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. By the way, Edward Shorter wrote a very good article, Critical of Psychiatry, in the Wall Street Journal last year.
Good.
I got a copy of it. And he was just basically saying, this, I think it was titled Why Psychiatry Needs Therapy, and then maybe he's actually beginning to come around. I do have a copy of his history.
Let's hope.
Psychiatry.
Do you have a question or comment for Jim?
Well, I wanted to make a suggestion to Jim, since he's an attorney who's active here. One idea that came to me recently as I was listening to a lecture by a Yale University School of Medicine neurology professor named Stephen Novella. He defined disorder as different from disease or illness. And I see all the statutes are for involuntary treatment refer to mental illness, not mental disorder. In fact, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders refers to disorders. And I think you could make an argument that people who don't have anything biologically wrong with them, which is what he defines as an illness or disease, do not meet the statutory involuntary treatment criteria. I think a similar argument can be made about statutes or with statutes that refer to involuntary medication. Medication is different from a drug. A drug could be bad for you, like cocaine is a drug, but it's not a medication. And so if the statutes refer only to medications, I think you can say that something like Haldol or Clozaril doesn't meet the definition of medication because it's bad for you.
Jim, you got a response?
Well, I think that those are, I think, good points. The big problem is that virtually no one gets even moderately good representation in these hearings. Hardly anybody does. And so people's rights are just being trampled on. I mean, the lawyers assigned to represent people, you know, basically take the position often, oh, well, if my client wasn't crazy, she'd know this was good for her. And so that's the problem. In my view, probably 10% or less of the people that get locked up, you know, involuntarily committed, is a euphemism for it, meet the legal requirements for it. And in my view, no one really can be drugged against their will, or electroshocked for that matter, legitimately under the criteria, because you've got to show that the drugging and electroshock is in the person's best interest. And I think, and by clear and convincing evidence, and I think that while someone might legitimately decide to take some of these medications, especially occasionally, that you can't show by clear and convincing evidence that it's in the person's best interest
as a, you know, as a matter of evidence. And but these things are not being raised to the courts. And we've actually developed a force-dragging self-defense package, and it's on our website, and it's got a couple of affidavits that present this evidence. And Mind Free, you can get them from Mind Freedom, the actual certified copies of these affidavits that are at least have a good chance of being admissible in court. To challenge these, and I know that...
That's right, Jim. Actually, people can just Google Mind Freedom, one word, Mind Freedom, and the word SHIELD, and you'll get to our link about those downloadable affidavits. Also, we did just get a shipment in for those that need a, quote, live notarized signature for actual entering this into court. And, Jim, you know, you're one of the main lawyers to really fight this stuff. And we get a lot of calls at the office for people hoping that some lawyer is going to fix things because, you know, we're Americans, right? So we're like, where's the lawyer? I need a lawyer. So can you help clear something up for people? Can you tell them that we need both lawyers and protest? I mean, you're going to Philadelphia because the law is not enough. The civil rights movement showed we need people power, protest, activism, ferment. That we're not just going to get it from a magic law, whether it's a great one like CRPD or the laws that are on the books right now. We need to actually have some people power. Can you address that?
Actually, I've written a lot about this, actually, and I think that the public education part of it, which the protest is key to, is the most important thing. And I've recently been honored to be a blogger on madinamerica.com, and my first blog is called A Three-Pronged Approach to Changing the Mental Health System. And what I go through is how we really need to focus on three things: public education, alternatives, and honoring legal rights. And all those three reinforce each other in a way to bring about system change. And I don't think I don't have enough time to go through that
but
you can Google it. And on May 6th, there's going to be a companion conference. I'm going to talk about that. And so people, if you come there, or, you know, might be, if you're really interested in, you know, in how to really organize to change the system, you'll get at least my view on how to do that. And the public education is absolutely the most important. And that's why I'm going to Philadelphia. And,
that's
and
right.
We need numbers. We need people
and
to get there to get attention.
That's right. Come on into Philadelphia or protest from wherever you are. And if you go to our website, if you Google Occupy American Psychiatric Association, just Google Occupy American Psychiatric Association or add the word Mind Freedom if you want to make sure. And you'll find travel tips about getting to Philadelphia, housing tips. You'll find an email list that you can join for planning the protest. Links to different activities that you can do, but I think that's the main thing, Jim, is that we need to hit the streets again, nonviolently, peacefully, using the latest in technology in order to speak out. We've got a whole lot of calls, so let's go right through these. Thanks so much for the caller from New Hampshire. Very nice call. Thank you. So now let's go to Ohio here, area code 419. We have area code 419 from Ohio.
Hi, this is Pat Risser, and hello, David and Jim.
Great, another longtime activist, psych survivor, Pat Risser. Okay, Pat, what's your comment or question for Jim?
How do you reach the personal decision of being pro-choice? I personally am opposed to psychiatric drugs and ECT because of the known harm that they cause. Basically, if you say that you're pro-choice, you're allowing people to self-harm. And I have a problem with allowing people self-harm. So how did you come to that?
Pat, didn't you used to be a smoker?
I certainly did.
Well, I mean, should we ban tobacco?
You know, is there an answer to my question?
Okay, go ahead, Jim.
I think electroshock should be abolished. Okay, so I'm not pro-choice on electroshock.
Well, neither is
now, mind. On the drugs.
I got to point out, Mind Freedom also is for abolition of electroshock and psychosurgery because they're inherently brain damaging, whatever the dose, at whatever the amount, they inherently involve intrusive brain damage. So we actually for banning for the medical use of those procedures. Yeah.
Well, so the use of psychiatric medications is harmful too.
Yeah. No, I understand. Okay. And so I think it's a tough deal for sure. I think obviously it's way overused. But the difficulties that some people get into, you know, and the help that some people find from it, if they are knowledgeable about it and decide, well, I'm it's worth it to me to do it. I remember, what was the guy's name from California? And he was talking about how, you know, he had the voices and he was homeless and the drugs helped him not be homeless and he was, you know, so afraid that if he went off the drugs, he would be homeless. And he knew that they were very harmful, and he made that choice. And I think people should be allowed to make that choice. And I know a lot of people who use them periodically when they get into trouble and they go, well, I'm just going to take this for, you know, a little bit and get through this. And I think, you know, that's obviously a lot less harmful than taking them a long time.
Well, Pat,
and then if I can, might just say one other thing, Pat, and then I'll let you talk. Is there's this book called The Center Cannot Hold, and maybe I shouldn't mention this, but anyway, it's a marvelous book by Ellen Sachs, The Center Cannot Hold, and her name is spelled ELYN. And if you read that book, I mean, I have a different interpretation of, you know, what happened in her life than she does, and I think the drugs are harming her. But if you read that book and see all the how much she tried to not take the drugs and how, you know, she was locked up and restrained and all that kind of stuff, and now she's and she's been able to be a law professor and, you know, and all that stuff, I'd have a hard time saying that she shouldn't be allowed that choice. So I think it's the big thing is that people should be told the truth about them, including this harm, and including that there are other approaches that have been proven to be far more helpful to people without the harm. And those choices should be available. But anyway, I'm not going to say that we should prevent people from taking them if they want to. Now, children is a totally different matter, and I wish that we had time to talk about the
situation with
children. Well,
especially foster care. I think, Jim, I think especially foster care, where we are the parents. But, Pat, we only have a few minutes left. We got three callers waiting. Do you have any?
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
No, thank you.
Okay, Pat. Pat's an amazing longtime activist in our movement, and people can be in touch with him also, radio@mindfreedom.org. You know, I don't think anybody considers Mind Freedom to be soft on the pharmaceutical industry because we're one of the main groups that actually protests. I think that's the key thing is, like, are we going to get beyond the theoretical where we're just talking to one another, or are we going to actually hit the streets? So let's go to a few more callers here from the state of Washington, area code 509. Name and where you're calling from?
This is Becky Murphy. I'm in Yakima, Washington.
Thanks,
hi, Becky.
Hi. A couple things, comments on things that were said. One of the drugs the drug that is most prescribed to children right now for ADD and ADHD, first was marketed as a weight loss medication, and it was taken off the market because it killed too many people. And then they put it back on the market, and like I said, it's the most widely prescribed drug for kids with ADD.
Good point. Any other comments or questions?
The civil rights thing, one of the things that has occurred to me here recently is the fraud that it is to what they call the mythology of it's a disease when it's when there's no disease that has
been
discovered. That's fraud.
Let's let Jim respond to that.
Yeah.
Jim, so in terms of protesting the DSM, I guess you're going after fraud, huh?
Right. Well, I mean, I think it is a fraud, we're running out of time, but a couple interesting things. One is, a few weeks ago, there was a radio show on NPR where some psychiatrists were talking about the antidepressants, and they basically said, we talked about the serotonin deficiency theory, and they said, oh, well, that's really been disproven.
Mm-hmm.
But they all said they tell their patients that, and they said when asked why, was, well, because that'll make them take their drugs, and so they basically admitted, and they all agreed that was an okay thing to do, to lie to their patients.
Wow.
About there being a chemical imbalance.
Somebody should hold a protest of these guys. I tell you, hey, we got
what
a caller from area code 315 in New York. A caller from New York, 315. Name and where you're calling from?
Hi. My name is Liz, and I'm from Resources New York.
Yeah, do you have a real brief comment or question for Jim? We got one more caller to get on.
Yeah. Regarding ECTs and the comment that involves ECTs, I don't really believe that we have a personal decision when it comes to that. I know for me, in the early 2000s, I was too sick to know better, that I shouldn't do it. And unfortunately, I lost my memory, which don't exist, and I developed a learning disability. And yet, I hear the Psych Association is going to try to lower the standards. And I'm concerned about that.
Let Jim respond, though, because we got another couple of calls. But thank you for being so brave to speak up about being a shock survivor. Thank you, Jim. Any response on that?
Well, I think that everybody should read this marvelous book by Linda Andre called "Doctors of Deception." What
yes.
The shock doctors don't want you to know.
And Jim,
also
the caller was pointing out the FDA may be very quickly rubber stamping. That hearing was a year ago, the first hearing on electroshock. So we should do a show on that. We're going to do next month. We're going to have Ted Chabaczynski on as a guest here on the second Saturday because he'll be also speaking in Philadelphia, coming out from California to protest. Then in June, we're going to be doing one on prison, and so we should do a shock show. Okay, we have a caller coming in here from another caller from Ohio. A caller from Ohio, real quick. Oh, I'm hearing an echo. Let's come back to you if we can. We have a patient caller in New York. Have we had you on from 315?
Yes.
Who is this again?
Liz.
Oh, have you been on yet?
Yeah, I just spoke about ECTs.
Oh, okay, Liz. I'm hitting the wrong buttons at this point. Let's see. We've had, I think that we've been able to get everybody on who wanted to be on, which is kind of a miracle. Jim, you're an amazing activist and one of our most popular guests. We do have a caller just got on from California. Real quick, few words, question or comment?
Hello.
Yeah, real quick, question or comment?
Yeah, this is Maxine from California. Thank you so much for the Occupy APA.
Okay, Maxine, I should tell you, we're going to let you keep talking, but we're going to be ending the Mind Freedom web broadcast in a few seconds, but then it will continue on the archive, so people can be able to hear the archive later, and we'll continue to record so we can talk with Maxine. But this is the Mind Freedom live free web show, protest, Google Occupy American Psychiatric Association. Join Jim Gottstein. He's with Psych Rights. Google Psych Rights to be part of that. Jim Gottstein, our guest in this hour. Callers from all over the place. Thank you so much, callers. Thank you, John Jordan Cascade, for being next to me. And I guess I've invoked the spirit of John McCarthy, Jim, at the beginning of the show. That was That was really odd. His name was in front of me here because I'm trying to remember John and his contribution to Mad Pride. Jim, thank you so much.
Oh, you bet. My pleasure. Yeah, John was an amazing guy, and his work will live on. And you did a great job of compiling some of his amazing work on your website. And your,
I know. I love it that we have a so-called Mad Pride show, and we begin by my saying that John McCarthy's in the room with me. I always remember this show. Maxine, question or comment here for the archived part of our show for Jim?
Yes. I'd like to know if you've looked into anything about the lawsuits regarding the birth defects that are caused by psychiatric stroke.
And if you don't mind, I see a caller from area code 503 has been patiently waiting a long time. So caller from 503, who's on there?
Can I finish?
Yes, you will in a second, but I don't want to lose
this. This is Marcia, David.
Oh, Marcia. Hey, Marcia.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. I didn't see you.
No, that's
there.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So go ahead, Jim. Respond to Maxine real brief.
Well, this is one of the areas where it's actually people are able to get some lawyers to take some of these cases. But it's well documented that a lot of these psychiatric drugs cause birth defects. And then what's so amazing is that these drugs are being pushed on pregnant women in amazing numbers. And in fact, there's a federal law that the so-called Mothers Act that is really a drugging dragnet where they're purporting to help pregnant women and then postpartum mothers are just looking for reasons to give them psychiatric drugs, and it's an unbelievable horror. So, but again, it's one of the areas where it is possible sometimes to get a lawyer to actually take those cases. Of course, there's no way that you can be compensated for some of these horrible defects.
Thanks, Maxine.
Thank you.
Longtime activist Maxine Hayden in California. And so that leaves Marcia to get the last word. Marcia, did you just click that you wanted to speak? Because,
yes, I did it at the end.
Okay.
I did it. That's okay.
Well, wait a minute. I have a sound effect for you here. The wonderful Marcia. Hold on. Here it is. Where the heck's my sound effect?
That's okay. You're a great
sound
effect.
No. Here it is. Here it is, Marcia. What? Mad Pride, Marcia. Go ahead. Your question.
All right. That fits. I'm, as a teacher, I saw what we do to kids to keep them in the box, and drugging is one of the main things we do when they don't want to stay in a room with no windows for 5 hours. I'm asking you, Jim, what strategically, because I see children as the Achilles heel of this whole movement, what we can do within our own communities and what you see happening so that we can, target this immoral use of drugs on children.
Well, we've promulgated this Medicaid fraud initiative. It turns out, we even have a form or model complaint for people to use. And it turns out that most of the psychiatric drugs given to poor children, children on Medicaid, and that includes virtually all foster children, is Medicaid fraud, and the government is just ignoring it. And so there are two things that one can do about that. One is to actually bring suit against the psychiatrist who's doing it and for the fraud basically in the name of the government, on behalf of the government, and we have this whole program in it. But the idea is that each prescription carries a minimum penalty of $5,500, and that would bankrupt the psychiatrist, and the idea is to just scare the other ones into stopping it. And we also include the pharmacies because the big ones anyway, have enough money to make it worthwhile for the lawyers to pursue. Now, we've had a real setback in the Ninth Circuit where they basically said, if the government doesn't care, why should we? But it's a non-precedential decision, and we think these more of these cases should go, and we would encourage that. In addition, the Senator Carper has a subcommittee in the United States Senate and that addressing this issue, and we have a briefing paper that said they held a hearing in December 1st. They were basically all wringing their hands saying, what can we do, what can we do? And the representative of the Department of Health and Human Services, who, by the way, wasn't from Medicaid, basically said, oh, there's nothing we can do except exhort the states to be better about it. But we're suggesting that they get Medicaid to enforce this restriction to what's called medically accepted indications. So I'm hearing an echo all of a sudden. But anyway, those are the two things.
And, Jim, people can stay in touch with you to see what's happening around the nation on that. I mean, if 3 or 4 states did it, it might raise a little bit of levitate these guys in Congress. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. We absolutely need to try and push that and try and get some media attention and all that. But I think the focus on Senator Carper's subcommittee would be really good. And right on our homepage, we've got this briefing paper, and people can download that and get some background on this situation.
Thank you.
So, Jim, we have somebody who's been waiting to speak here and with you just even briefly, and I think they may have hung up here. Let's see. Is this you there? Is that you there? Who's that? Were you waiting to call to talk? No? From area code 707, you're just listening? Okay, I think it's somebody who is calling in who, let me try this one. Were you trying to speak with Jim? Hello?
Hello? No.
No? Okay, so I think that person must have hung up. If they're still on, I'd encourage them to email you, radio@mindfreedom.org. Hey, Jim, the statistics are whenever you're on, we spike in terms of the number of calls, number of people listening by archive. So thank you so much for the clarity of your message and for being on today. I hope it was a good one for you.
Oh, my pleasure. You're doing such important work, and we want to support it any way that we can.
Well, thank you, Jim, and and thank you for being there when I'm like talking about my dead friend. That's a diagnosis, you know. You can right now under DSM-4, you can get away with seeing and hearing dead friends for X number of days. And I think
I sent the white coats after you.
No, when DSM-5 comes in, I think they're getting rid of the grief exemption.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm just in time to channel John and not get locked up. But my buddy John Jordan Cascade has been sitting here patiently helping me with his very fast internet connection. So we had good sound quality, and so it's going to be a good archive. It'll be up there momentarily. Thank you so much, Jim. And thank you all.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All the people that listened all the way to the end of the archive here. For the archive part of the show, for Mind Freedom Live Mad Pride Web Radio every second Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And we'll hope to see you there in Philadelphia or wherever you are. Occupy the American Psychiatric Association. Google it or Google Boycott Normal or Google America, Google Psych Rights or our group Mind Freedom. This is David Oakes, director of Mind Freedom International. Thanks, everybody.